Chapter 7. The week was a grueling one, and having been sick the week before, I'd missed a lot of review. I spent almost all my spare time studying. All the guys were cramming, and there wasn't much time for socializing. I hadn't seen Valerie since that day in the stairwell, or had much time to think about her. Math and English hadn't been too bad, but social and French were going to be the tough ones, especially the oral French test. I was waiting for my turn when Madame Dupont sent me down to the office on an errand. I was trying to remember how to talk hockey in French when I arrived at the office and saw Valerie talking to Mrs. L., the secretary. She looked up at me as I gave Mrs. L. my note. Neither of us said a word, just stood looking at the countertop until Mrs. L. handed Valerie an envelope for one of her teachers. She took it off the counter upside down and the contents went sprawling. I bent down to pick up the papers. "Thanks, Joel," she said. Just hearing her say my name sent a pang through me, and I felt the need to explain. "I'm sorry I didn't call you, Valerie," I began. "I was sick and studying for exams and..." It seemed such a lame excuse. "I know," said Valerie. "It's wild this time of year, isn't it?" I studied her dark green eyes as we straightened up. Was she actually glad to see me? I returned her smile and she blushed. Despite all my faults, she seemed glad to see me. "Well," I said finally, "aren't you going to tell me how you did?" "How we did?" The color crept higher on her cheeks. "At the provincials," I reminded her. "We won, Joel." I grabbed her hands. "You won?" I couldn't believe it. My prediction had been right. "Awesome." She trembled with excitement. It was so close. I didn't even notice the secretary trying to give me the papers for Madame Dupont until Valerie took them. She handed them to me as we left the office area. "I told you I'd be talking to a provincial champ next time I saw you." "You did," she said, "but it's still so hard to believe." I wanted to put my arms around her and hug her right then, but the thought of Corey taking her to the dance stopped me. "I better get back to French," I said. "I'll see you around." I hesitated. Her hips swayed slightly as she pressed the envelope against the curves of her body. She waited, as if contemplating something, and then called after me. "Maybe I'll see you at the dance. Are you going?" Her question caught me off guard. Yeah, I thought I would. Are you?" She nodded. "Save me a dance?" she asked, looking at the floor. I stared at her. The girl of my dreams, asking me to save her a dance when she'd already agreed to go with Corey Martinson. Talk about confusing. Sure, I agreed, if Corey doesn't mind. Her head snapped up. Then a look of disbelief spread across her face. I backtracked. I heard that Corey asked you to the dance. At first, I didn't think she was going to answer me, just stalk off instead. "He did," she retorted. Now I was really confused. Her eyes narrowed, and I said no. The impact of her words hit me as she turned and marched down the hallway. I almost ran after her. But could I ask her to go with me now, just 2 days before the dance? Had she been waiting for me all this time? By the time all the questions had swirled through my head, Valerie had disappeared down the corridor. I raced up the stairs to French class. I'd made a fool out of myself with Valerie again, but this time I felt strangely elated. She wasn't going to be at the dance with Corey. In fact, she'd asked me to save her a dance. Then again, she'd just stamped off, obviously more than a little irritated with me. But somehow that didn't matter now. I leaped up the last few stairs. When that last waltz played, I was going to be the one holding Valerie in my arms. I managed to get through my French test and my social one the next afternoon. Even Ryan was breathing a sigh of relief. We bought our tickets for the dance on the way out of school. I'll see if Lise or Dad can drop us off and pick us up after the dance. Pete said his mom would give us a ride over in the van. She's taking a bunch of the other guys, too. I told him you'd be at my place at 7. May as well make an entrance. I could hardly conceal my excitement. Even Ryan seemed elated. Exams were over, and he hadn't found them as bad as he figured he'd would. I could just imagine tomorrow night, walking into the gym with all the Falcons, music blaring, lights flickering. The girls would be there early, of course, and they'd see us come in. It wouldn't take me long to find Valerie. I chuckled silently. Wouldn't the guys be surprised when I walked over and led Valerie Sherman out onto the dance floor? Yes, tomorrow night was going to be a memorable one. I just knew it. We spent the next day cleaning out lockers and the phys ed equipment rooms. The girls were decorating the gym. I didn't actually speak to Valerie, but I did smile in her direction, and she did smile back. Outside, the snow had started, and the wind was whipping it into the sheets by the time school had finished. Lee said there was a storm warning in effect, but I hardly heard her. I wolfed down my meal and went up to change. Not that I was going to wear anything special, just my usual jeans and one of my favorite shirts, but I still needed time to make things look right. I tried parting my hair on the right, then the left, then gave up and mused it into its usual haphazard waves. I contemplated borrowing some of Dad's aftershave, but decided against it. Lee's would be really suspicious then. It was only 6:30 when I got downstairs, but I figured I'd head over to Ryan's anyway. I hollered at Lee's, took one last look in the mirror, and jumped in the car. The snow was blowing straight at us, making it hard to see. We crawled onto the main road, and Lee's took it real slow. Ryan's dad's car still wasn't in the driveway when we arrived. "Your dad will pick you up from the school," Lee's hollered through the wind. I waved and dashed for the house as she drove away. Ryan didn't answer when I knocked. Probably couldn't hear on the account of the wind, I told myself. I rang the doorbell. Then, just as I was about to ring a second time, Ryan threw the door open. His eyes were wild and crazed, and his shirt was half untucked. "Damn," he cried when he saw me. "Where's the ambulance?" I shut the door and raced upstairs behind Ryan. His mom lay listlessly on the bed, her eyes fixed on the ceiling. Her pupils were huge and dilated. Suddenly, her body arched and began to shake. Ryan grasped her hands. I heard Ryan's dad come into the house about the same time as I heard the sirens in the distance. Mr. Davis rushed to his wife. His eyes swept wildly around the room, and he grabbed an empty box off the night table. "Sleep right," he said. I stared at the familiar package of sleep medicine. The sirens blared, then died. "I'll meet them," Ryan cried, racing down the stairs. I followed him to the landing, stepping aside as the paramedics took the steps two at a time, with Ryan in the lead. "Sleeping pills," he answered as he led the way into the bedroom and Mr. Davis held up the empty package. I went downstairs to close the front door. The snow had already filled the doorway and white footprints dotted the carpet on the stairs. The doorbell rang again. I opened it to see a police officer standing in the light. "You've got a medical emergency here, son," I pointed upstairs. "What happened?" "It's Rye's mom." My voice cracked and I started again. "My friend's mom tried to commit suicide." The words were stuck in my throat. "An overdose?" I nodded numbly. "She was home alone?" "No, Ryan was here." Together we walked up the stairs. A stretcher lay on the floor beside a big gray toolbox full of emergency equipment. Ryan and his dad hovered behind the paramedics who had already put Mrs. Davis on oxygen. I heard the Velcro of a blood pressure cuff being unstrapped. 140 over 90. An arm yanked a black box out of the kid amidst snippets of conversation. Heart monitor, another seizure, blood sugar. The police officer put a hand on my shoulder. "It looks like everything's under control here." He steered me towards the door. "We'll wait downstairs." It wasn't long before the paramedic's footsteps pounded down the stairs. Strapped flat on the stretcher was the frail body of Ryan's mom. We stepped aside and they disappeared into the storm. Mr. Davis climbed into the ambulance with his wife. "I'll follow with the boys in my squad car," shouted the officer into the wind as the doors of the ambulance closed. "Take it easy, fellows," he added. From the front walk, Ryan and I watched the ambulance drive off. "Why don't you boys grab your coats and lock up the house," the policeman said. "You'll probably just have to wait at the hospital anyway." We shuffled back to the doorway in silence. I found Ryan's Falcons jacket on the chair near the front door, and he went to check the back door. "Ryan, I'm sorry, I faltered. Ryan's eyes clouded over. Then abruptly, he slammed his feet into his sneakers and slipped his arms into his coat. He locked the door behind us, and we fought our way through the storm to the police car. The officer carried on a running, one-sided conversation all the way to the hospital. Every once in a while, I tried to respond to his comments about the weather or the National Hockey League. He'd seen our jackets, but I only managed half-hearted answers. Ryan stared blankly out the window while the police officer prattled on. It took us a long time to reach the hospital with all the traffic and accidents. The officer told us that the ambulance would have been much faster. He dropped us at the emergency entrance and wished us luck. I followed Ryan into the emergency room. The place was packed. Ryan made his way to the reception desk. The receptionist asked him who he was, then said that Mrs. Davis had been registered, but she didn't know how she was doing. She told us to sit and wait. We picked our way to two empty chairs. I knew there wasn't much point in saying anything, but I felt like I had to try. "This is a good hospital, Rye. They handle stuff like this all the time." I watched the expressionless face behind me. "It'll be all right, Ryan. I have this feeling." I had no such feeling, but the words just came out. Maybe I was trying to convince myself as much as Ryan. I kept seeing Mrs. Davis lying on the bed. I'd never seen anyone looking so lifeless. I studied the other people around me. Some, like the guy opposite, with his arm in a makeshift sling, were waiting for treatment, but others, like us, were waiting for news. Some of them looked like they'd been there for a long time, and every so often we heard the sirens come up the hill. Eventually, I stood up to stretch my legs. "I'm just going to Let Dad know where I am, I told Ryan. Want a chocolate milk or something? There was no response. I maneuvered my way through the emergency room to the telephones and dropped a couple of coins in the slot. Lise answered. Lise, it's Joel. Listen, could you tell Dad that I'm at the hospital? Hospital? She shrieked. Steve! Joel, where are you? What's happened? We'll be there in a minute. Are you hurt? Lise, take it easy. By that time, Dad was on the phone. Dad, listen, I'm fine, okay? I heard him exhale in relief. Lise said you were at the hospital. What's going on? Ryan's mom tried to commit suicide. I guess it happened just before Lise dropped me off at Ryan's place. He'd already called the ambulance. Where's John? Dad asked. He's here, I think. He got home just before the paramedics arrived and went in the ambulance with Mrs. Davis. A cop drove Ryan and I. Are you at the Rocky View? Yeah, in the emergency room. So far, we haven't heard anything. I'll be right there, son, said Dad. Sure, Dad. I was about to add that he really didn't need to come, but he'd already hung up. There wasn't a whole lot anyone could do, just wait to hear how Ryan's mom was. A woman, sobbing violently, came through the doors into the waiting area. I stood staring after her. Then again, maybe it was a good idea if Dad did come. I plugged the machine and picked up two chocolate milks. My hands were trembling. What would happen if Ryan's mom didn't make it this time? If the ambulance had been too late? I searched for Ryan in the crowd. He was leaning over his chair, his hands clenched, his eyes staring at the floor. I crossed the room and sat back down in my seat. I bought you a chocolate milk. Ryan glanced up at me. You okay? He asked. I was sure I looked pale. Yeah, I managed. Amazed that he'd noticed. He looked around for the first time. It's not a great place, is it? I shook my head and sipped my milk. Look, Joel, I'm sorry about all this tonight, Ryan sighed. I forgot. You're supposed to be at the Christmas dance. I looked blankly at him. It was the farthest thing from my mind. Why don't you call your dad and see if he can pick you up? He looked towards the desk. I expect there will be some news soon. His voice trailed off. I found my voice. That's okay, Rye. I'll stick around. You know, you might want... you know. We drank our milks in silence until Dad burst through the doors. I don't remember a time I was so glad to see him. He hurried over to us and put a hand on each of our shoulders. How are you boys doing? I shrugged. How long have you been here? He asked, eyeing the desk. I studied my watch. Maybe an hour or so. And you haven't had any word from your dad? Ryan shook his head, and from his eyes I knew that he, too, was glad that my dad had shown up. Doesn't he know you're here? Ryan looked confused. The cop told the paramedics he'd bring us up. I think Mr. Davis heard him. I said, Dad walked over to the desk and spoke to the receptionist. The nurse is going to let your dad know you're here, he explained. He should be out shortly. Within minutes, Mr. Davis strode out into the waiting room. Ryan, I'm sorry. I didn't know you'd come. I registered her and then went back inside. How did you get here? How is she, Dad? Mr. Davis sighed. It was pretty touch and go, son. They pumped her stomach and gave her charcoal, so hopefully that will absorb whatever's left in her system. She's starting to respond, and things look pretty good. I watched Ryan's body relax and tried to imagine how he must have been feeling for the last hour or so. You can come in and see her, he said, if you like. Okay, said Ryan. Mr. Davis turned towards us. Steve, Joel, thanks very much for coming up. I haven't been thinking clearly. The boys shouldn't have been waiting out here. Don't worry about it, John. Dad gestured towards the corridor. Go ahead, and I hope all goes well. We watched Ryan and his dad pass through the white doors with the tiny windows. Let's go, said Dad gently. You can't do anything else for Ryan tonight. Dad was right. I followed him to the elevators and down to the underground parking. He didn't say anything. By the time he'd unlocked the car, I felt as if I could fall asleep on the spot. You guys were going to the Christmas dance tonight, weren't you? Dad asked. I can still take you by the school if you like. I closed my eyes and leaned back against the headrest. Take me home, Dad, please. I slept in until 9 the next morning. Lise hovered around me, but didn't say anything about the previous night. She dropped me off at school late. It was only a half day to pick up our exam marks anyways. Somehow the word I got out and all the guys crowded around me at class changed with 1,000 questions. I didn't know where to start, and I never had a chance to. Mr. Winter, our guidance counselor, caught up with me in the hallway and asked to speak to me. I followed him back to his office. Mr. Davis called the school this morning to explain why Ryan wouldn't be in. He asked if you'd take Ryan's test marks with you, so I took the liberty of collecting both yours and Ryan's grades. He pushed two envelopes across the desk. It must have been a difficult night last night. Mr. Winter sat silently, and after a bit I found myself telling him about what had happened. Sometimes prescription drugs can be as bad or worse than street drugs, he explained. An overdose of any over-the-counter drug can have disastrous effects, especially if the person is sensitive to it. Of course, I have no idea how Ryan's mom will be in the long run. She obviously needs help. I think you know she's been ill for some time. I nodded. I expect you were a great support at the hospital last night, Joel. I didn't do much, I said. Sometimes just being there is all anyone can do. Mr. Winter paused. It might help if Ryan could talk to you, Joel, but that may not be easy for you. I looked up. How are you doing, anyway? Fine, I think. And the other boys, the rest of the hockey team? I shrugged. I don't know. I haven't said anything to them. I don't really know what to tell them. If I were you, I'd give them the basics and leave it at that. Suddenly, I could see the snowy footprints on the steps and hear Ryan filling in the paramedics as they took the stairs two at a time. I thought about how Ryan had taken control at the house, his stony silence at the hospital, and then how he'd said I should go to the dance afterward. What would I have done if I'd been in his shoes? Mr. Winter was talking to me again, something about Christmas being an especially tough time of the year for lots of people. It's not uncommon for people to attempt suicide during the holiday season. It seems to bring out the best and the worst in people. Mr. Winter droned on for a few more minutes, then let me go. I wandered through the empty hallways on my way to my locker and escaped from the school with the envelopes Mr. Winter had given me. Leah honked as I came through the doors, and I had to admit that I was glad to see her. I was just passing by, so I thought I'd give you a lift, she lied. Thanks, I said, slamming the car door. What are those? She indicated the brown envelopes. Exam marks, but I haven't looked. She reached across the front seat and touched my elbow. Did you manage okay this morning? Yeah, I said. I think so. The morning was already a blur. We rode home in silence. After half an hour of staring blankly at the television, I mustered the courage to look at my marks. I hadn't done particularly well in French, but my marks were solid. I threw Ryan's envelope in front of me and wondered how he'd done. I debated about having a look, but didn't in the end. The way things were at his house now, it wasn't likely that his dad would say too much. I hadn't even called yet today, but the telephone seemed pretty impersonal after all we'd been through last night. I think I'll go over to Ryan's, I called up the stairs to Lise. She hurried to the top of the staircase. Do you want a lift? I shook my head. No, thanks. I'll take Jasper for a walk. Jasper raced in circles through the snowdrifts. The snow had stopped late last night, but the roads were still not completely cleared, and the wind had left huge white crests. Jasper crashed into these full force, his black nose plowing out the other end, his coat covered in white flakes. We cut across the park where the community had flooded a portion of the playground to make a little kid's skating rink. It was empty, but someone had made a half-hearted attempt to clear it, and Jasper hit the ice full out, his front legs sliding too far in front and his back legs pedaling like crazy to catch up. He hit the snowbank on the far side and looked back. I called him over and rubbed his ears. Crazy mutt. We stuck to the side streets so I didn't have to put Jasper on a lead, and it was almost mid-afternoon when we reached Ryan's. Mr. Davis's car was in the driveway. I put Jasper in the backyard and wondered what I was supposed to say. Mr. Davis answered the door, showed me in, and called upstairs. Ryan came down. His hair stood almost straight on end, and it was pretty obvious that he'd just woken up. Nice hair. Ryan's eyes drifted to the envelope. Marks, I said. Mr. Winter asked me to give them to you. Did you open the envelope? No, I said, embarrassed that I thought of doing so. Ryan peered into the living room where his dad was sitting reading. Come on, he whispered. Upstairs in his room, he took a deep breath and opened it. A slow smile spread across his face. Switzerland, you're not going to believe this. I tried to peer over his shoulder, but he pulled the paper away. I passed them all, even math. I put up my hand for a high five, and he gave me one. Truth is, I didn't think I had a chance. I checked the outstretched paper and scanned the marks. They were mostly 50s with an odd 60. My father would have flipped out if I brought home marks like these. I looked around Ryan's room. I'd been in it hundreds of times. It could have been my own. The furniture, the hockey posters, the bed. I studied the ceiling. Even the stucco was the same. Did Ryan stare at the stucco on his ceiling? After last night, I was sure he did, and yet we never talked about stuff like that. What did Mr. Winter said? That it might be good for me to talk to him about it, but not so easy for me. I took a deep breath. How's your mom? I could see the muscles in his neck tense up. The doctors think she'll be okay. He paused. Whatever that means. I could have just said something like, "That's good," and closed the topic, but this time I didn't. "Did you see her last night?" He nodded. "She was still unconscious. We're going back up this afternoon." He stopped, and I had no idea where to go from there. There was a moment of silence. I fought the urge to change the subject. Then, suddenly, he picked up where he hadn't left off. "Even if she's conscious, she won't know us. At least she didn't last time." He sighed, and I let him talk. "Every time it happens, she gets worse and worse. I don't know how much farther she can go, but she keeps trying." He looked up at me. I managed a sympathetic smile. "I thought she was sleeping upstairs. She does that often, you know. Just goes up and lie down like she's asleep, any time of the day or night. I should have checked on her, Joel, but I was too busy wondering when Dad would make it home so I could go to that dumb Christmas dance." "It wasn't your fault, Rye. And who knows how long before that she'd taken them. You can't be beside her day and night." We sat silently. "The doctors keep telling us that it's a chemical imbalance, that if they can just find the right combination of drugs, they might be able to help her." His eyes stared through me. "It's not fair, Joel. Why can't she just be like other mothers?" I let Ryan's words sink in. "Other mothers? Like my mother?" Jasper barked outside, and Ryan's dad hollered upstairs. It was almost time to go to the hospital. "I'd better show him these," said Ryan, picking up his grades, "and I'd better go before Jasper tears up your yard." Mr. Davis came to the bottom of the stairs. "Thanks for coming by, Joel." I made my way down the side streets with Jasper. For the first time ever, Ryan and I had a real conversation. Mr. Winter was right. I think it had helped him, even though I hadn't really said anything. I broke into a jog and whistled for Jasper. Angie was supposed to be coming home tonight, and Dad started his holidays next week. Suddenly, I wanted nothing more than to be home with everyone, Angie, Dad, and yes, even Lise.